This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
African nations under the auspices of the African Union have been speaking with one voice to have a seat at the Security Council table because they said decisions are made that affect Africa with no African input.
That's VOA's Peter Kloti reporting from the United Nations General Assembly in New York. Details coming up. Also, world leaders are hoping to soon send Kenyan troops to Haiti to quell gang violence there. And Nigerian unions are threatening to strike, demanding the reinstatement of fuel subsidies. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa says targeted sanctions imposed on Zimbabwe also hurt South Africa. In his address Tuesday to the United Nations General Assembly in New York, Ramaphosa said they're imposing untold suffering on ordinary Zimbabweans, but also have a collateral negative impact on South Africa. According to some political observers, the remarks will not go down well with activists in Zimbabwe who think Ramaphosa's government is not doing enough to rein in President Emmerson Mnangagwa and his oppressive government. I discussed the politics of Zimbabwe with Paul Nanatulia, research associate at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He says, first, Zimbabwe needs to put its house in order.
The number one barrier to investment in Zimbabwe is the political crisis in the country. The country has had a political crisis continuously since 1999-2000. All the elections have been disputed. All the elections have resulted in violence. All the elections have resulted in a lack of legitimacy of the ruling party. This is what Zimbabweans think. This is what Zimbabweans are saying.
As for the South African president's plea to lift sanctions imposed on neighboring Zimbabwe, Nanatulia says,
President Ramaphosa's call for lifting of sanctions against Zimbabwe, which obviously was echoed by President Mnangagwa. So I've just read a series of statements and reactions by Zimbabweans, and they're basically saying that they understand the call for lifting of sanctions, but they do not think that sanctions are responsible for the underdevelopment, the violence, and the lack of respect for human rights and democratic and governance principles that Zimbabwe is going through.
Nanatulia says Mnangagwa is going to find it very difficult to have the sanctions lifted because, he says, Mnangagwa has a serious legitimacy problem. He mentions the recent South African Development Community, or SADC, election monitoring report. He says it is very uncharacteristically candid and very telling regarding the fairness of last month's presidential election. Whether SADC takes action on Zimbabwe, he says, is a different issue altogether.
And there are calls for a panel of eminent leaders to begin open and inclusive negotiations in Zimbabwe to return that country back on a democratic path. So this is what is happening. This is what is coming out of Zimbabwe. So I think it's going to be very, very difficult for President Mnangagwa to be able to govern, you know, in the same way that ZANU-PF has been accustomed to governing since the days of Robert Mugabe.
That was Paul Nanatulia, research associate at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington. World leaders are hoping to soon send Kenyan troops to Haiti to quell gang violence there. Meeting on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly, Secretary of State Antony Blinken addressed the issue with Kenyan President William Ruto, but the idea makes some Haitians uneasy. VOA senior Washington correspondent Caroline Porchutti brings us the latest.
Violence in Haiti. Gangs are said to control 80% of the nation's capital in Port-au-Prince. Homes burned, schools closed, Haitians displaced. but now assistance from foreign troops. Kenya will lead a multinational effort of at least 1,000 soldiers to help restore peace. So far, Jamaica and the Bahamas have offered to assist Kenya.
Mr. President, so good to see you.
Secretary of State Anthony Blinken walks across the room to shake the hand of Kenyan President William Ruto Thursday at the United Nations, just a few hours before Ruto said this before the UN General Assembly.
The cry of our brothers and sisters who were the first people to win their struggle for freedom from colonial tyranny has reached our ears and touched our hearts.
Also at the UN, an advisory group to discuss the economic and social impact of the violence. This just 2 days after U.S. President Joe Biden addressed the UN General Assembly with these words.
I call on the Security Council to authorize this mission now. The people of Haiti cannot wait much longer.
But the idea of a U.N. multinational force worries some New York Haitians who remember the 2010 Napalese U.N. force that brought cholera to their country. At a Creole restaurant in Manhattan, VOA spoke with Wesley Jean Simon.
The gang violence is resonating in Haiti, and Haitians created it, so we need to fix it ourselves.
And Rose Marilyn.
The thing that's going on with the country, with there's no safety, especially after the president got assassinated, so nobody really feels safe.
Late Friday, Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry will address the United Nations General Assembly. At the same time, Haitians plan to protest his presence here in the city block that leads to the United Nations. The Security Council is expected to vote next week on sending the multinational force from Kenya to Haiti. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News at the United Nations.
Around the theme, rebuilding trust and reigniting global solidarity, global leaders in New York will be slowly winding down their annual General Assembly at the United Nations. To wrap up the week, I spoke with our reporter in New York, Peter Cloti. The first question I posed to him, were African leaders able to voice their concerns loud and clear in their speeches given the myriad challenges the continent is facing?
Thank you very much, Ayers, for having me. Indeed, a lot of these heads of state and government in Africa aired their concerns, particularly about the United Nations. Some said that although this thing was to rebuild trust and work together and all that, the UN has been calling for transparency, the embrace of the tenets of democracy. However, the UN is not democratic, and they are calling for reforms. And they said, although the UN says it has embraced reforms, it is not reforming fast enough. African nations, under the auspices of the African Union, have been speaking with one voice to have a seat at the Security Council table, because they said decisions are made that affect Africa with no African input. And that is why they are pushing so hard to have this resolved. The next thing they are also talking about is the ongoing war in Ukraine, between Ukraine and Russia. And they are calling for a speedy resolution to this conflict because it is affecting supply chain processes. It's affecting their economies. The impact on their economies have been devastating. They are finding it quite difficult to come up with policies to improve the living conditions of their people. So their people, some of them are restless. Some of them have been critical and demonstrations all over the place. So they are calling for an expedited solution to resolve some of these problems. And of course, climate change, because they say that Africa bears the brunt of climate change and that Africa only contributes less than 5% to the issues that exacerbate or worsen the climate crisis, and that those Western countries, the G20 countries who they said contribute significantly to this problem, should put their money where their mouth is and show commitment rather than only pledges to put money to help cushion the effect of climate change. So these are some of the issues being addressed here at the UN General Assembly.
Peter, you are right. African countries are some of the lesser contributors to global warming and carbon emissions, but are among those most affected. Sustainable Development Goals, SDG. Africa remains one of the regions of the world with an enormous gap between the SDG targets and achievements. Any movement on that?
Well, they held a two-day meeting, which began on the 18th and ended on the 19th. That official who attended told me was that They are trying to come up with solutions so that people who are countries that are lagging behind, like Africa, would come up with solutions so they can surmount the lagging, because this is the threshold, the halfway through the 2030 target. And they want some of these African countries who are lagging behind to expedite the process to leapfrog and surmount the challenges that they are facing. So these are some of the issues they are discussing about the Sustainable Development Goals. And so far, they're telling me it's good. They would want to go and implement the outcome of this meeting that they had here, right here in New York.
And lastly, Peter, one of the biggest challenges faced by Africa is the lack of resources to finance developments, developing countries. How can they change the scenario whereby African countries are lacking resources to finance their development?
Well, that's one of the issues that is being discussed on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly. You have a lot of these heads of state trying to attract direct investment to their country, which they think or they say is one of the ways to address this very important question you ask. So they are meeting business leaders, they are meeting corporations. For example, the president of Nigeria went and rang the closing bell at NASDAQ with that visibility, and then held business meetings with a lot of businesses in New York. And then they held meeting with Joe Biden, with other business interest organizations who are willing to come to these African countries. What they are looking for, I am told, is to have the enabling conditions to protect their investment, to ensure that their investments are protected. So now the ball is in the court of these African countries to provide the enabling environment that will attract them to want to put their money so that, you know, it becomes a win-win situation. This is what the president of the Democratic Republic of Congo said when I spoke with him.
That was VOA's Peter Kloti speaking by phone from New York. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Nigerian unions are threatening to strike, demanding the reinstatement of fuel subsidies the government ended in May. The Nigerian Labour Congress, which represents hundreds of thousands of workers, is asking the government to reverse its decision or introduce measures that would help citizens cope with soaring food and transportation costs. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Pam Emmanuel opened his barbershop 12 years ago in his hometown in Central Plateau State. He relocated to Abuja a few years ago in a bid to expand his business. But recently, he says, he has been struggling to make a profit.
Since the government removed the fuel subsidy, the price of fuel has increased and everything in the market has also increased. So the only thing we can do is to meet up. So we have to increase our prices.
The Nigerian government had subsidized fuel prices for decades. In May, President Bola Tinubu shut down the program.
The fuel subsidy is gone.
That decision more than tripled the price of gas and sent food and transportation costs through the roof. The cost increase also made it expensive to run the generators that many Nigerian households and businesses depend on when the erratic power supply shuts off. Barber Pam Emmanuel wants the government to take action.
I'm just pleading the government to do something about it. They should look into it. First is the masses, not themselves. So they should have conscience.
President Tinubu embarked on some of Nigeria's boldest reforms in decades to grow the country's struggling economy and address corruption. He also floated the national currency against the dollar and other global currencies to eliminate multiple exchange rates. But the naira has fallen to historic lows since then, and his policies are drawing strong criticism from Nigerian labor unions. The Nigerian Labour Congress, NLC, which represents hundreds of thousands of workers, wants authorities to revert to the previous status quo, review salaries for its members, and introduce cheaper gas-powered mass transport systems to reduce workers' transportation costs. Last month, the NLC led thousands to the streets in protest, calling the government's policies anti-poor. This week, a meeting between the National Executive Council of the Workers' Union and government officials ended in a deadlock. 2 weeks ago, the NLC gave the government 2 weeks to reverse its policies. NLC spokesman Benson Upa says the deadline is Friday.
Subsidy service is not a burden to the nation. It is those who exploit the window of subsidy to create, it is those people that create the burden. And the president in his speech graciously acknowledged the existence of a cabal. But instead of dealing with that cabal, he chose to deal with us, the innocent, in fact, the victims. If at the end of the 14 working day ultimatum, his demands, his lawful demands are not met, it will embark on an indefinite strike action. The NEC has not rescinded that decision.
Nigerian authorities are asking for more time to fix the problem. Simon Lalong is Nigeria's Labour and Employment Minister.
I must say that our meeting was very robust and we had a very, very fruitful meeting. But at the end of the day, many of those items that we left are still for consideration.
The World Bank says Nigeria could save $5.1 billion this year from its economic reforms. At the same time, it warns that more than 7 million citizens could be pushed into poverty if the subsidy removal is not properly managed. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Gunmen in Nigeria kidnapped 35 people from a university in northwest Zamfara state today. Mugira Yusuf, the spokesperson from the Zamfara governor, said armed men seized 24 students, 10 workers, and a security guard from the Federal University of Gusau. Reuters News reports a security source said soldiers rescued 6 female students and killed 5 abductors during a shootout. The source said a joint security operation between the army and police was underway to free those still in captivity. Armed gangs have plagued the Northwest in recent years, kidnapping for ransom, looting and destroying communities, and murdering civilians. Security forces' attempts to halt their rampage have met with little success. Libya's Eastern-based administration says it will host an international conference on October 10th in the flood-hit port city of Derna to aid reconstruction efforts. A tsunami-sized flash flood broke through 2 aging dams upstream from Derna after a hurricane-strength storm lashed the area on September 10th. Entire neighborhoods were destroyed and thousands of people were swept into the sea. According to the French news agency AFP, the official death toll from the flood stands at more than 3,300, but the eventual count is expected to be far higher, with international aid groups giving estimates of up to 10,000 people missing. The International Organization for Migration on Thursday said more than 43,000 people have been displaced by the flood.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1 then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1 then 202-258-3076.
Somali authorities recently wrote to the United Nations requesting a 90-day delay in the planned drawdown of African Union troops after suffering several significant setbacks in its fight against Al-Shabaab militants. The letter, which French news agency AFP has seen, shows the National Security Advisor requested the delay of the second phase of the AU troop pullout. The original plan was for the troops to leave by the end of this month. A diplomatic source confirmed the authenticity of the letter, and another source close to the matter confirmed the request. AFP reached out to several Somali government officials who did not comment. UN resolutions call for the ATMIS force to withdraw by the end of next year, placing security operations in the hands of Somalia's army and police. The Horn of Africa country has been racked by civil war and then a surge in violence by the Al-Shabaab Islamist militants for more than 30 years. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Decades of relative geopolitical stability have given way to an intensifying competition with authoritarian powers, declared Secretary of State Antony Blinken in an address to the School of Advanced International Studies at Johns Hopkins. He noted as prime examples Russia's war of aggression in Ukraine and the People's Republic of China's efforts to reshape the international order through its increasing economic, diplomatic, military, and technological power. These, among other factors, have upended the world order as we knew it, said Secretary Blinken.
The United States is leading in this pivotal period from a position of strength. Strength grounded in both our humility and our confidence. Humility because we face challenges that no one country can address alone. Because we know we will have to earn the trust of a number of countries and citizens for whom the old order failed to deliver on many of its promises.
The United States' vision for the future is a world that is open, free, prosperous, and secure, said Secretary Blinken.
That vision is not America's alone, but the enduring aspiration of people in every nation, on every continent. A world where individuals are free in their daily lives and can shape their own futures, their communities, their countries. A world where every nation can choose its own path and its own partners. A world where goods, ideas, and individuals can flow freely and lawfully across land, sea, sky, and cyberspace, where technology is used to empower people, not to divide, surveil, and repress them.
The United States is pursuing a global economy that is defined not only by competition, openness, and transparency, but by how many people share in its growth, explained Secretary Blinken.
A world that generates a race to the top in labor and environmental standards, in health, education, infrastructure, technology, security, and opportunity. A world where international law and the core principles of the UN Charter are upheld and where universal human rights are respected. We'll advance this vision guided by a sense of enlightened self-interest that has long animated U.S. leadership at its best.
The United States still believes that investing in other nations and people will not only serve humanity's interests, but also our own.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.